Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, today with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So before we get started into our main topic, which would be carb manipulation, we are going to, well, at least I'm going to explain, because I got several questions about my bonkers goal this week of 22,000 steps. So I just want to be sure that our audience realizes that everything that I do in my prep, I communicate with my coach. So every check-in, I have all of the data points of things that I'm doing. And from my perspective, I always want to do like extra credit, if you will. But I always ask permission. So I always ask, you know, aside from the things that you've given me, is there anything that I can do more of that would help me along? And so in my situation, that meant steps. But I want to also clarify the difference between steps being counted for your cardio, steps being counted for your training, steps counted for your regular movement. So this is my best way of putting it, okay? So when, and make sure you communicate this with your coach, because everyone's different. Everyone has a different plan, all of that. So communication is key, first and foremost. Secondly, your movement throughout the day. So any kind of cardio that your coach prescribes should count towards your total movement of the day. Same with if you have like an Apple Watch and you hit your strength training when you start lifting weights. Those accumulate steps as well. So those are compiling into it. So for me, I have like particular heart rates that I'm achieving so that I achieve certain intensities in my cardio. And it's way more than like a walk out with my dog, right? So if I'm doing HIIT cardio, I may be hitting like upwards of 170 beats per minute. Or, you know, if I'm doing like steady state cardio, I could be at like 150 beats per minute. But when I'm walking my dog, and that's counting for my steps, I'm probably at a heart rate of 70. It's a restorative walk in nature. Or like, for example, last night I parked further away from the baseball diamond and got up, you know, and just kind of milled around in between innings just to get extra steps. My heart rate wasn't getting up high, so I wasn't adding additional cardio. I just wanted to clarify that. So that's how I'm getting my 22,000 steps. It's not, a lot of times our body is super smart. It tries to find homeostasis. So let's say you do an intense bout of HIIT cardio and training, whether or not you realize it, you do a lot of less non-exercise activities. So your knee kind of down regulates automatically. So you do a lot more sitting, less fidgeting. And it's kind of a chore to force yourself to do even just light walks outside with your dog and things like that. Does that, am I answering that, or kind of clarifying that? Okay. Chris?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's important to use, like you said, the heart rate to differentiate between cardio and your NEAT, so your daily activity and walking, because they both are utilized differently by your body and both need to be prescribed specifically or taken into consideration when looking at the full formula of your prep. So I think you did a really good job. I think it's like a good explanation to check to make sure that your cardio is intense enough to not be counted as your steps, and also that your steps are more, like you said, a restorative activity, or just, you know, regular walking further in a parking lot, those types of examples, and not an intense like sprint or walk on a treadmill, heavy incline, those types of things, just to be able to separate them. And I think the biggest part too is you said about communicating with your coach. I think it's best when athletes make sure that they include all the variables so that you guys can work together in tandem to get to your ultimate goal.
I think that's the biggest thing. It's just the data piece. We're basically data collectors as a prep coach. So, you know, we're trying to get you in the slightest deficit possible to achieve your goals. So we're trying to give you the least amount of cardio, the most amount of food to give you enough deficit so that you're going to reach your goal. So anytime, even when you add extra, maybe it's not extra food. Obviously, we pretty much all know that if we eat outside of our diet and we go over in our macros, we know we're going to gain weight and that throws things off and that's a deviation. But I think a lot of times people don't understand that if you add cardio and things to your plan, that's kind of like cheating on your plan, especially if you don't tell your coach because they're factoring your deficit based on the amount of cardio or steps goal that they give you. And that's a manipulation of the variables and the data. So it could really throw off the grand scheme plan. I mean, I've had clients in the past that they'll be like, oh, yeah, well, I just thought I needed like some extra cardio. So I just added some step mill for 20 minutes every day. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, like this is not part of that equation that I, you know, took so much time to calculate. So it's just really important that everyone's on the same page. So don't just go out there and start doing 22,000 steps. That's the moral of the story. But
Yeah,
anyways.
I think that's explained well.
Okay. So first, we're going to give you a little bit of a background on just how carbohydrates are processed in the body. And then we got a specific question on front loading during peak week and then back loading during peak week. And we had referenced those in previous podcasts, but I don't think we really truly gave an explanation of what they are. So I'll start with, first of all, the definition of a front load. And remember, this is always context dependent. I can't stress that enough. Everybody's body is different and reacts differently. And literally every prep can be different. I don't think I've ever peaked someone exactly the same way, you know, for shows. We learn every time what works and some things that worked in the past really well, you know, maybe won't for the next prep. So just keep that in mind. When we're talking about a front load, it means that we're putting the athlete through a depletion state, but we're front loading their carbs early in the week during peak week. And then we'll slowly taper leading up to the show, depending on feedback from check-ins. And then a backload is basically like a day before the show. We're gonna do, you know, a load of carbs then, but we had depleted leading up to it. So first, let's just kind of go into the energy dynamics with carbohydrates and how those are processed in the body, and then we can kind of explain with my nerdy analogies how we do these different things and why we do them. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds fabulous.
Okay. So let's just start with the fact that all carbohydrates we consume are just digested into monosaccharides. So that's like a simple sugar, and they're going to be absorbed by the body regardless of whether or not the food source is a sugar cube or you're eating high fiber, low glycemic bowl of oatmeal. It doesn't matter if it's healthy carbs or what, they're ultimately turn into the same thing. But how they're digested and absorbed, obviously the healthier quote unquote carbs are absorbed much slower, and then the simpler sugars like the sugar cube are digested very quickly. So once they're broken down and absorbed, the monosaccharides, they go to the liver and then they just fill the energy stores there. And after that, they enter the bloodstream and they venture out to the other cells of the body. And this is when insulin's released and it can kind of handle that sugar load that's in the body. And then after that, basically, once the carbohydrates cause the release of insulin, that larger that insulin response, things can go into like the muscles, into the fat cells, different things, but you're going to get a larger insulin spike after something like an intense workout. And then it's going to be not as beneficial to have a huge insulin spike before bed, because we know that, you know, our melatonin's kind of kicking in at that time and not our cortisol. I feel like I'm rambling, so stop me when when you kind of want to hop in here.
No, this is great. I feel like I'm back in school and I'm like, I should be writing all these notes out. I'm like really into this right now, so please continue.
All right. So, when we think about just carbohydrate breakdown and absorption and everything, and kind of like our blood sugars and things like that, just remember that when you have fiber included, so insoluble or soluble fiber, the average minimal requirement, according to the American Dietetics, is like 25 grams per day. So for females, you know, we can get up to like 30, 35, and then males can get higher in like the 40 range. But that's going to help with satiety, blood sugar levels, and then just kind of like your colon health and gut health. And so when we're talking about the blood sugars and all of that, we're going to kind of go into how this pertains to our carb loading. So I'll stop being sciencey for just a second. We'll just kind of talk about the body type. So why don't you take that, Chris? Kind of the body types that are best for front loading and then also back loading.
Sure. So the best ones for front loading are hard gainers, so people have who have a hard time putting on muscle mass, ectomorphs, which is also similar. Usually they have a pretty high metabolism, mesomorphs, and a combination of your ecto and mesomorphs. So we get a lot of like combination people, so that is another body type that's great for the front loading.
Can you
The
explain what the
best for back.
meso is in case they forget from that episode on body types?
Oh yeah, so mesomorph is more likely to put on muscle tissue. It's like the best body type for putting on some muscle mass. That's the best way that I would explain it. We usually have more of an athletic look. Is that a good explanation?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, perfect. And then the best types for backloading are weight loss clients. So if you are going through like a larger weight loss, master's competitor. So if you are a little bit older, backloading is probably a better option. Endomorphs. So that's your body type where you may hold a little bit more body fat. Usually those types of people require a little bit more activity, but they're similar to your weight loss clients. Certain mesomorphs do really good with backloading as well. I think that's where sometimes you get into the combination. So like an endomesomorph as well too, can benefit from the backloading.
Okay, so we gave you the backstory on carbs and everything. So if you notice between those two groups, one is very insulin sensitive and one is very insulin resistant. So your insulin sensitive people are your hard gainers, your ectomorphs. They are going to be very good at processing carbs because they are very insulin sensitive. Much like when you work out, you become more insulin sensitive. Now, the ones that Chris just mentioned for the backloading are very insulin resistant. So they don't process carbs as well. Now, one exception to that could be a master's competitor, but I find that as we age, we become less carb sensitive. So we just don't process carbs as quite as well as we age, in that the older we are, carbs can cause a bit of inflammation. So that's why those can fall into different categories. But again, it's context dependent. So this can be, you know, morphed depending on how the individual responds and how their body does with this carb manipulation. So we talked about, or I guess I mentioned that we carb deplete the athlete leading up to the load. And the reason for this is something that's called glycogen supercompensation. And basically, when you deplete your body of carbs, and subsequently the glycogen, then your body takes steps to correct that imbalance. Remember, I talked about how your body's super smart. Even with like your knee activity, it's always trying to find a balance and homeostasis. So when carbs are, lowered, let's say, you're getting 60% of your normal carb intake, and your body will kind of receive that message, and it'll make it more receptive to pulling in that glycogen and absorbing it. Do you have anything to add on that?
No, I think that's well, actually, I did like the one thing that was mentioned in here about tightness as well too. So I know a lot of times we use the lingo of like, wow, they're that person's physique looks really tight. And a good way to explain that was when you have that super compensation and the glycogen fills up your muscle tissue, it stretches the skin, and that's where you get a lot of that fullness and then also the tightness of the skin.
Yes, absolutely. And so keeping in mind that carbs get stored within the muscle, they store 2.7 grams of water for each gram of glycogen. And so when you carb up, your muscles become full and round, and the water actually accounts for about 75% of that size. So keep that in mind when you're talking about water. And speaking of water, I have one of my silly analogies. I always like these weird ones. So think
Oh,
of
this
your
is a good
muscle
one.
like a tub with water in it, and the water's running, the drain is pulled. So you're constantly basically peeing out any kind of water that you're pouring into the muscle. Now, there is a way to kind of slow that down. So we know that 75% of the muscle belly is water, right? Because I mentioned that. And carbs carry that 2.7% or 2.7 grams of water. So think of a carb like a sponge in your bathtub. And the more carbs or quote unquote sponges that you're throwing into that bath water, it's going to slow down the rate at which water goes down the drain. So think about that and refer to that when you're thinking about the muscle fullness and tightness. Now, somebody can overdo it with the carbs, and let's just imagine that that tub is filled with a ton of sponges, and then you start putting on the water. It really can't keep up, and it starts overflowing, and then you start to get some spilling out of the water and then also the sponges. So that's where someone can overdo it and do too many carbs on their load. And when we say spilling over, that just means that the athlete looks a lot less lean. They start to appear blurry in their lines and things. And what I usually see the next morning, if we've really nailed it with the proper amount of carbs, is the athlete will usually lose inches and they'll look crazy conditioned, super tight the next day after a huge carb load. And so, I mean, it takes getting to know the athlete and their metabolism and how they process carbs really well. And I think that's why it's an advantage why, I like to work with an athlete over several months and kind of see these trends on when we're doing like refeeds and things like that, so I can see how their body reacts. But do you have any anecdotal kind of things that you've noticed with either like a front load or a back load?
I definitely know, like, as a coach, the front loading requires more attention. I think a backload can, most of the time, be a little bit simpler and a little bit more conservative, but the front loading can get some crazy results as well too. So again, like you said, it's context dependent, it's athlete dependent, but it gets like a little bit hairy when you're trying to like front load that client and then there's a little bit of spilling over, but that's why it's good to do it earlier in the week so that you can manage the carbs the rest of the days leading into the show day and once you get that perfect peak, it's like it's amazing to see what just so simple manipulations can make the physique look like. So yeah, I always get excited. I like for myself, I feel super small when I'm depleting. Most of the times I've done backloads because my body's just done better with that. And I feel so small in peak week, and then I can't wait until I get a little bit of carbs, and I just like your muscles really pop. So it's a really neat experience. I will definitely say coaching is both a science and an art, and a good coach will like be checking in on you and making sure that they're monitoring that last week of manipulation to get you absolutely the on point on show day. So yeah.
Yeah, and I think of a time when you ha it was your pro debut actually, and we've
Yeah.
talked about how water plays such a big role in this, and I think you were pretty dehydrated from flying because when you are in the air, you do get more dehydrated
Oh
even
yeah.
if you're putting water into your body. And then I don't think you had maybe salted your food on the plane or the stuff that you had traveled with. So we ended up carbing you up, but making sure that we put lots of sodium or salt on your potato and steak, I think it was in this particular
You
situation.
have such a good memory. I
And
totally forgot about that.
I have a weird brain. I remember like every peak week run, and I remember looking at your glutes and they were so flat before we did this.
Yes.
And then you got some water, you had some salt and some carbs, and it was like your glutes just perked right back up. So, I want to mention sodium as well because
Yes.
that is definitely a really key part of this whole equation. Because sodium intake, when it's low, your blood volume gets reduced. And that means that you will have zero vascularity. I mean, you can just forget about getting a pump at all. And it's one of those things that I don't know why people ever got on the low sodium train and all of
Yeah.
that when I guess it's just part of learning, as you go through this process. I'm always open to learning new things, and I mean, there's so much research on just the fact that aldosterone comes into play as well. But if you're looking at the pump part of it and just getting some fullness into your muscles, sodium's super important. So you definitely don't want to deplete on sodium. You want to keep that high all throughout peak week. And then as you have that, and you can see it, like if you have like a cheat meal, basically that night, and it probably has a lot of sodium in it, you get like super veiny because you don't really want to be super, super veiny on stage with bikini, but like when you get those high amounts of sodium, have you ever seen that where you're just like you look
Oh
like you
yeah.
have snakes on your arms,
Yeah. It's
veins
insane.
popping out like crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, the last thing would just be to pay attention to also your potassium because your sodium potassium channels, both, if you they one doesn't work without the other, they both regulate your intercellular and extracellular hydration. So, it could be the fact that you could get too much potassium. So, work with your coach, obviously, and make sure that, you're eating foods that maybe aren't too high in potassium and that it throws off those ratios because that all can play a big role in all of that. So, in leading up to the show and kind of how you're looking. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like this explanation too with the sodium because I do believe everyone's like, oh, I get really puffy when I have a lot of sodium and I hold water. So they think that they need to pull it from peak week or before their show day. But actually, it works re in reverse because it low sodium or not enough will start a chain of events where your body actually, like we talk about the supercompensation, starts to hold water because it notices that there's like dysregulation. So yeah, paying attention to all of those things and again communicating with your coach. I know so many people that forget to salt their food on peak week. Raising my hand right now. So it's just so important to pay attention to all those variables, especially when you're doing this like crazy science experiment.
Absolutely. And if you're traveling, I suggest when you're kind of portioning out your stuff to just put salt on it and then also bring an extra salt shaker, but don't bring it through, don't keep it in your bag with TSA. They always think salt's a, like some sort of bomb, I swear. So I always put it out on the tray, or I put it in my check bag in a plastic, not a glass container. But yeah, that's something super important that you salt your food additionally in your portioned out meals if you're traveling. And then just to kind of close things out, if we're talking about low carb and high carb situations, some things to keep
Good
in
point.
mind where you would want your carbohydrate intake to be at a higher level is with intense training, any sort of, high level physical activity, and then also if you have lower body fat. So obviously your coach will be working with you on all of this, but that's why I also implement carb cycling with my athletes when they get super lean, so that we can kind of go through these undulation periods of depletion of low carb days and then high carb days. Just super important that you note that non-activity periods or rest days should probably be like a low carb day, or days that you're going to be a little bit more sedentary. So do you have anything on carb cycling that you wanted to mention now that since we're on the carb train today?
No, I just from experience, I would say I've always seen like a variance in carbohydrate cycling to be very beneficial for people's physiques in response. And like I always tell people, if I've had a case where somebody has gotten injured or they they get sick, and it's really nice to just have those rest day macros already set up so that I can tell them, okay, so let's focus on your recovery and let's adjust to your rest day macros. And it just keeps them continuing with their prep, having that modification based off of like their energy expenditure that day. So yeah, I think it's beneficial.
Good. Yeah, and I know that there has been recent research on like a double refeed study, and there's been times where I'll have an athlete do back-to-back high carb days, and again, it's all tailored to that athlete, their goals, and how their body responds to things. But I have noticed that it really helps with optimal body composition, recovery, and then it really helps the thyroid and leptin regulation when somebody is really super lean and they are doing those carb cycling bumps. Your body can't ever really get and settle in into the low carb zone because you're constantly tricking it. Very similar to the bigger example with the super compensation in peak week. We just do it on a little bit more extreme level than like an undulating carb cycle, but I don't know if I explained that
So
well enough.
the rule, yeah, so the bottom line is your body is always trying to adapt.
Yes.
So you just want to be ahead and be smart and use strategic patterns and methods to be able to get it to that extreme level, because it's always going to try, like you said, it wants homeostasis.
Yep.
And that's why this is an art.
So anything that you can take away from this podcast is number one, communicate with your coach on anything that you add, subtract, delete, or exchange. Make sure that you're always communicating and that you're being as detailed as possible in your check-ins with data, because the more communication you give your coach, the better you're going to look on show day. Because the more information we have and understand, and when we're getting to know you, then we're going to be able to see those little idiosyncrasies and those details come out. And we're going to see trends that are working, trends that aren't working. And we're going to be able to give you your best look on show day with all of that information. So, with that, are we good to close out? Do you have anything
Yeah,
before we
standing ovation.
communication? All right, so you can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini, And then if you would like to apply for the team and get your unicorn prep, you can go to glamgirlbikini.com and hit the Get Started button. From there, you'll send your application and we will set up a free phone consultation to see if it's the right fit. So with that, this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.